Have you ever wanted to play the perfect tabletop game, where story beats run smoothly, and there's no awkward pauses between dice rolls? Yeah, me too. But since that's impossible, I did the next best thing, and novelized my Witcher tabletop game to showcase the story in its cleanest form. The result is this podcast. I'm Jacob Gerstel, and this is Tales from the Witcher. Part audiobook, part actual play, part serialized adventure, and a whole new way to vicariously enjoy tabletop games. Welcome to the world of The Witcher, where monsters roam freely and the continent is once again at war. If you were hoping to follow the plight of Geralt of Rivia, however, I'm not going to be doing that. Instead, I offer you the story of a not-so-merry band of degenerates who are making their way across the continent. So sit back, relax, and enjoy. The Cleaner Way. 1. They didn't know how long they traveled. On their feet, moving north, the refugees lost all sense of time. There were hundreds of them, moving forward and sometimes faltering. They helped each other up when needed. Most didn't know each other, but they didn't have to. They could have been traveling for 3 days or 3 weeks. The refugees didn't know. They came from the Kingdom of Lyria. They did know that. They were fleeing the Empire of Nilfgaard. The refugees knew that, too. The invaders had come quickly from the south, in a haze of black and yellow. Blood followed. Not many escaped, but those that did fled northward. One step at a time, for 3 days or 3 weeks. The refugees moved in a loose conglomeration. Groups split off for a time and disappeared. Mostly they came back. Sometimes they didn't. But they kept close to forage and camp and create a sense of security. They took the lesser roads, and at some point ended up in the Kingdom of Edirn. There were no clear boundaries or markers or guards demanding tolls. The refugees simply were in Lyria one moment, Edirn the next. They saw no signs of the Nilfgaardian vanguard. The refugees reached a clearing and saw a town in the distance. To the east was forest. To the west, the shadowed outline of the Mahakam Mountains. It was the first town the refugees had seen, and the town had a name. Ashford. 2. A big man brought up the rear of the refugees. He was one of the few with a horse, and he rode it well. A hooded cloak obscured his features, but it couldn't hide the two swords strapped to his back. The big man saw the town and lingered as the mass of humanity filtered through the gate. The guards looked unimpressed and waved the poor folks through. But one guard, a thin man who leaned too hard on his spear, held out a hand at the big man. "Hold on," he said. "What's your business here?"
"Same as the rest," the big man said flatly. He looked down at the guards. "Is there a problem?"
"There is," the other guard, a short man who didn't lean on his spear enough, said. "Take off your hood."
"Why?"
"Just do it, or we won't let you in," the tall guard said. The big man took off his hood, revealing a square face that might once have been plain. As it was, the face was scarred and adorned with an eye patch. His thick hair and mustache were red as rust, and his good right eye was yellow as a crown. "It's like I thought," the tall guard said to the short guard. "He's one of them witchers. Clear as the swords on his back."
"May I go through?" the witcher asked.
"What do they do to make your eyes like that?" the short guard asked.
"I'd like to pass."
"All right, go on," the tall guard said, waving the witcher in. "Just don't cause no trouble, witcher." The witcher spurred his black horse through the wooden gate. Ashford looked like every other small town. The main road ran from one end to another and splintered into a half-dozen smaller roads flanked by thatched hovels. The refugees clogged the road and slowly diffused into one of the two inns. The witcher chose the inn with the wooden wolf head hanging over it because it had a stable, and because he preferred the aesthetic. The witcher dismounted and walked his horse to the stable next to the inn, called the Wolf's Head Tavern. The stableman was as large as the witcher, though in all the opposite ways. The witcher watched the man's prodigious gut shake as he approached.
"And what have we here?"
the stableman said in a thick accent that made him near indecipherable.
"A fine beast by the looks of it, yes?"
The stableman reached for the black horse, who shied away from his touch.
"Careful," the witcher said. "You got anyone else here with you?"
"Yes, sir, got a lad who watches the stables at night, don't you worry about that. Not my lad, though, never had any lads myself. Always said me horses were me lads, not that I've sired any, if you'll beg my pardon, sir."
The man, who had never sired any horses, laughed, and took the reins from the witcher.
"Why don't you go to the Wolf's Head and have a drink? Tell the barkeep the first one's on me."
"Thanks."
"Yes, sir, just go and don't worry about dear old..."
"Diable," the witcher said.
"Fine name for a fine beast. Don't worry, sir, me and Diable will get along well."
The stableman tried to lead Diable to an open stable, but the large horse snapped and bucked and kicked. The stableman yelped, but, to his credit, did not let go. Rather, he held his ground and tried to coax, to no avail. The witcher nodded, held out his left hand, the one missing the fourth finger, and made the sign of Axie. Diable snorted, but lowered his head and slowed his stomps. The stableman sighed, and the witcher left. 3. Cedra Lestrette found the Wolf's Head Tavern to her liking. It looked like any other tavern she'd visited, with clumps of tables and one barkeep and little else. Its mediocrity was exactly why Cedra liked it. That, and its lack of music. Cedra saw the refugees settling in. She knew most of their names, and maybe one or two details about each, but little more than that. If the refugees shared anything deeper with Cedra, they might consider her a friend, and Cedra didn't need that. Her hazel eyes settled on a hooded figure sitting alone in the corner, nursing a tankard of ale. He was slim, and his clothes, though frayed and patched, likely used to be fashionable. This drew Cedra to the man on their travels, but the man would have none of it, wouldn't even give his name. Cedra thought that exceptionally rude. She took comfort that he rarely talked to anybody. Cedra leaned on the bar. The barkeep nodded at her.
"What'll it be?"
"Well, that depends," Cedra said with a smile. "What do you have?"
"Exactly what you think," the barkeep said, filling up a tankard from a barrel without looking.
He put it on the table, and Cedra watched the beer's froth lick the top of the mug. Cedra licked her lips. The barkeep filled a second tankard just as efficiently and placed it next to the other.
"Tell you what, take one of these to the man in the corner there," he motioned to the hooded figure, "and it's on the house."
"Ah, and the other?"
"For you, of course, also on the house."
"I dare say that's a deal." Cedra scooped up both tankards and sauntered over to the hooded figure. She placed the mugs down. "Compliments of the Wolf's Head." The hooded man looked up. The candlelight showed regal features, with high cheekbones and almost porcelain skin. His eyes glittered. Not at Cedra, which she also found exceptionally rude, but at the beer. He took it.
"My thanks to the Wolf's Head."
The man spoke with a high tone, in an accent Cedra couldn't place, but would define as fancy. He didn't drink like a fancy boy, though. He drew from the tankard like a fish. Cedra sighed and took a seat opposite the man, but not before slinging the lute off her back and placing it against her chair ever so gently.
"So, do you have a name?"
"Yes."
Cedra waited for more, but was disappointed. She sipped her drink and glanced around. A big man with two swords was talking to the barkeep. He had been with the refugees as well, and didn't share anything on their travels either. That was fine with her. She didn't try to talk to the big man. Most of the refugees followed Cedra's lead.
"Do you play?"
the hooded man asked. Cedra turned back. "What?" The hooded man pointed to Cedra's lute and repeated the exceptionally rude question.
"Do you play?"
"You'll be happy to hear that not only do I play, but I play exceedingly well. Didn't you ever hear me on the trail?"
"No."
The hooded man had drained his beer and was torn with both tankards.
"Would you like to hear me play?"
The hooded man shrugged. Cedra stood up and grabbed her lute in one fluid motion. She gave it a few precursory strums to ensure it was still tuned, it always was, and winked at the hooded man. "Watch this." Cedra Lestrette played slowly at first, just enough to grab everyone's attention, draw them in nice and slow. Then she played a little faster, picking up the pace like a heartbeat. Once every eye was upon her, she moved around the room, adding variations to her chords, yet not adding words. She didn't need any words this time. Soon, Cedra was bounding around the room, and everyone was clapping along. Cedra's fingers moved in a blur, and her brow furrowed in concentration. Now was the most important part, the crescendo to end it all with a flourish. The piece would be meaningless without a flourish. She didn't miss a note. The refugees and barkeep applauded as the final chord disappeared into the air like smoke in the wind. Cedra gave her deepest bow and traveled the length of the tavern, collecting any spare crowns thrust her way. Cedra felt a little guilty taking money from war refugees, but then she remembered she was a refugee herself. She ended her collections at the bar, and the barkeep approached her with 3 tankards of ale. "Nice tune," he said. Cedra tossed her brown hair back. 3 beers may be an excessive thank you, but I'll take it." "Not quite. Do me a favor and get those 3 at one table." The barkeep motioned to the hooded man, toying with his mugs, and to the big man with 2 swords. Cedra looked at the barkeep. "And who's the 3rd? 4. Jeremiah Keller walked the main street and ignored the cart vendors hawking nearly rotting fruit and caged chickens. There were more guards than a town of Ashford size warranted, he noticed, and less villagers out on the street than a town of Ashford size warranted. But then again, a war was looming, and the guards weren't bothering him, so Jeremiah paid it little mind. Jeremiah found a patch of land near an alley, next to the chicken hawker.
"This'll do," he thought, dropping his rucksack to the ground with some effort. "This'll do fine."
Jeremiah hunkered and opened the bag, pulling out a heavy rectangular box, its metal clasps and hinges polished smooth. Jeremiah unlatched the box and opened it from 2 ends at the top, like a blooming flower. Jeremiah hefted the box up to give it its legs. Jeremiah reached into his bag to grab his hammer. He stood up to find a guard in his face. A town guard, by the looks of it, not one of the Edernian soldiers garrisoned in town. The guard's eyes were fixed on Jeremiah, more specifically on the blackened, twisted veins that ran up the left side of his face and neck like gnarled roots. Jeremiah raised an eyebrow.
"Can I help you?"
The town guard broke his gaze and spat in the dirt. "Should be asking you the same thing. What are you doing?"
"Why, setting up shop."
Jeremiah held his arms out wide, as if an entire forge was at his back instead of a tinker's forge at his front.
"Just thought I'd make myself useful to all the soldiers garrisoned here. I can repair armor and weapons, among other things."
"And make some coin while you're at it." Jeremiah gave his most charming smile.
"That's how commerce works, yes."
The town guard sighed. "Look, you're a refugee, so I'll give you a warning. You can't just set up shop here. There are rules. Guild permits needed. And Lord Nowak doesn't like it when people flaunt the rules."
"My dear man, I'm simply trying to provide a service."
"Maybe I didn't make myself clear." The town guard leaned close enough for Jeremiah to smell the onions on his breath. "When Lord Nowak finds someone flaunting the rules, he sends Crucible Cowl for him. And people who meet Crucible Cowl usually don't come back. A lot of Nilfgaardian spies have been disappearing in town lately. I'd hate for you to join them." The guard was poised to move, if needed. Jeremiah was a strong man, more stocky than big, but strong nonetheless. And with a hammer in hand, he thought he could take the town guard. But what would be the point? It would draw far too much attention. Jeremiah scratched at his thick beard and nodded.
"You make a strong case. I'll close up shop."
"Good," the guard said. "Be quick about it and go get a drink. Enjoy the last few days of peace before Nilfgaard arrives." Jeremiah entered the Wolf's Head Tavern just as a brown-haired troubadour finished her performance to great fanfare. Jeremiah thought she exaggerated her bows a little bit too much, but admitted he could have just been in a sour mood.
"Not like to make any marks today," he thought with a sigh. "Not even enough for a drink."
Jeremiah waved to 2 refugees he knew from their travels and made his way towards their table. As he did, the brown-haired troubadour cut off his path. She held 3 tankards. "Nice to see you, Jeremy."
"Jeremiah,"
the craftsman said, but didn't bother trying to place the troubadour's name. He didn't remember it. "Ah, right," the troubadour said. She looked away from Jeremiah's face, from the webwork of veins. "Allow me to make up for it. Join me for a drink." It wasn't a question, and Jeremiah was thirsty, so he followed the troubadour. She placed the tankards at the hooded man's table. She gestured for the 2 to drink as she went off to another table with the 3rd tankard. Jeremiah shrugged and took a seat. The hooded man pushed his 2 empty mugs aside and went in on the 3rd. Jeremiah thought about how best to leave Ashford. "Just sit down and don't ask questions," Jeremiah heard the troubadour say. He looked over his shoulder to see a big man with 2 swords, 2 tankards, and 1 eye being shepherded to their table. "All right, great. We're all here."
"Who's we?"
the hooded man asked.
"And why are we all here?" the one-eyed man asked.
Jeremiah drank beer. The troubadour quirked her mouth to the side. Well, you see, turns out the barkeep's extremely generous with... The barkeep approached their table with a platter of bread and cheese, and a bottle of vodka. Jeremiah spotted a Mahakam label on the bottle. That was good. Everyone knew dwarves made fine spirits. Look, I'll make it quick. The name's Steldwill, the barkeep named Steldwill said. And if you four are looking to make a bit of coin, meet me out back at sunset. Food and drinks are on the house. Steldwill left the four in silence. The silence continued, until the hooded man ripped off a chunk of bread.
Well, he said, no need to deny good hospitality.
Agreed. The troubadour tore bread and cheese. Jeremiah followed. The one-eyed man went last, when everyone took their share.
Guess we should start with names, the troubadour said with a full mouth.
Without waiting, she said, I'm Cedra Lestret, of Kedwin. The one-eyed man nodded. Zevo of Kavir. Jeremiah didn't think Zevo sounded like a Kavirin. He reached for the bottle and uncorked it, sensing the pressure to speak. He saw no reason to lie, at least not yet.
Jeremiah Keller, a veteran.
All three looked at the hooded man, who feigned surprise.
Yes?
What's your name? Zevo asked without inflection.
Ethramel.
Zevo rubbed his red mustache.
Of?
Of Redania, Ethramel said.
Jeremiah didn't think he sounded like a Redanian.
Why not take off the hood? Cedra asked. I distrust men in cloaks as a rule.
Ethramel took off the hood. He was handsome, Jeremiah thought, in a classical way. But that made sense, given he was an elf. The pointed ears sticking out of his dark, silky hair were a dead giveaway.
Don't blame him for wanting to cover it up, Jeremiah thought, sipping his beer.
He left his small glass of vodka untouched, like everyone else. Cedra was the first to raise her glass.
Well, to names. And to making coin. Whatever that means.
The four clinked and drank.
Think it's a creature terrorizing these good folks, Ethramel said. Or something more... mundane.
Creature, I hope, Zevo said.
Jeremiah looked at Zevo's yellow, cat-like eye and said,
So you're a...
witcher.
Never seen one up close. Cedra's eyes drifted to the silver bearhead medallion. She, perhaps unknowingly, touched the wooden fox head pendant around her own neck.
Zevo shrugged. Well, here I am.
Here you are,
Jeremiah confirmed. He thought of asking Zevo if his armor or weapons needed any patch-ups, but decided against it. If they were to work together, at least for a short while, there would be time to ask later. So they ate and drank and said very little. 5. In all of Ethramel Untred's many years, he had learned a few things that he considered to be absolute rules. The first was that Dwans were only as trustworthy as their purse allowed. The second was that free booze was never truly free. The third was that nothing good ever happened in a fucking alleyway. Steldwill, the human who somehow managed to mix all three absolute rules, came out of the tavern's back door and found the four waiting in the alley.
Glad you decided to take my offer.
We'll at least listen to your offer, Ethramel said. So get to it.
All right, look. Ashford's in a terrible spot. Wouldn't be begging for refugees' help if it wasn't. There's been a string of robberies recently. Someone, or something, has been breaking into our homes and taking anything they could find. Been a few deaths, too. People murdered in their own home, likely for trying to stand up for themselves.
Ethramel had heard such tales before, and learned long ago it was better to hide than to fight.
The elven way, he thought with a trace of a smile.
He quickly wiped it away. Didn't want to look rude when he said, Sounds like a matter for the town guards.
Sure, if they weren't busy preparing for an upcoming war on one end, Steldwill held out his left arm. And catching Nilfgaardian spies on the other, he held out his right arm.
Ethramel wiggled his fingers.
He's speaking of sedition.
Everyone ignored Ethramel. He was used to it.
I don't have much, Steldwill said, but I can give you 750 marks if you stop whatever's robbing us.
750 each?
Jeremiah asked. Total, but... Steldwill sighed.
Look, my family's lived here since humans first came to the shore. I've got a map showing an alternative route west, towards Mahakam. If you take the main road out of Ashford, the Blackcloaks will find you.
Once they've taken over the town, you mean? Cedra said.
Steldwill nodded.
Yes.
The Mahakam dwarves are known to be fine crafters and traders,
Jeremiah said. No one agreed or disagreed.
Zevo cleared his throat.
You think a creature might be responsible?
Steldwill shrugged.
That's your job to find out, isn't it?
You're the bloody witcher.
I'd like to see the bodies, Zevo said, more to the others than to Steldwell.
Yes, that's a fine place to start, Ethermel added, unnecessarily.
There's a house on the far end of town, turned into a makeshift morgue. Find the mortician there. His name's Aaron.
Steldwell looked at Ethermel. He's like you.
Ethermel flicked the tip of his ear.
An elf mortician?
Well, the job kind of fell to him. Steldwell coughed and shuffled in the dirt. It's a grim business dealing with bodies. You know how it is, so naturally.
You give it to the undesirables, Ethermel said. Yes, I know exactly how it is. Let's go.
The morgue was just an ordinary home, as far from the center of Ashford as possible. Ethermel smelled the bodies well before they reached the door. He didn't want to imagine what the Witcher could smell.
Cedra looked a little pale, and Jeremiah took the blue bandana, normally resting on his brow, and covered his mouth and nose.
Ethermel knocked, and he heard a low shuffling.
What is it?
It's the Wild Hunt, here to snatch the bodies, Ethermel said in a lilting voice.
He grinned back at the other three and saw they did not return his cheer.
No plowing fun, this lot, he thought.
The door opened, and an elf squinted his purple-colored eyes at the four. His expression calmed considerably when he saw one of his kind.
What do you want?
To see the bodies, Zevo said. We were hired to find whatever's been robbing and killing.
Ah, right. Well...
Oh, let us in,
Ethermel said, walking past the dark-haired elf. Five bodies lied on straw mats in the corner, seemingly ordered from most to least decayed. The stench was unbearable. Aaron stood near the door as the others entered.
Take a look, I suppose. Afraid I won't be able to help you much. Medicine's more a hobby than a profession.
How many days has it been? Cedra asked, covering her mouth with her hand.
Oldest is 5 days, Aaron said, motioning to the leftmost body.
Then to the rightmost body. She died last night. Ethermel and Zevo inspected the bodies. Ethermel found a few scattered leaves, hibiscus maybe, and a bit of wood on three of the victim's clothes.
Doesn't look like a clean death, he said, observing smashed rib cages and heads.
No. Zevo lifted the freshest body's hand and sniffed. This one's got mud under her fingernails, and the faint smell of piss.
Would that be, human piss? Ethermel asked.
Zevo shook his head. Too faint to tell what kind of creature, but definitely not human. This wasn't the work of bandits.
I would say not, Jeremiah said. Would take one hell of a big human to bludgeon these poor folks like that.
He looked at Zevo.
Maybe someone your size.
Can we see your house? Cedra asked, motioning to the freshest corpse. Might be able to pick up something before the trail gets too cold.
I can take you there, sure, Aaron said.
Please do.
Ethermel rubbed his eyes.
Some fresh air would do me good.
Fresh air did not do him good. Ethermel suppressed the urge to vomit the entire walk over. He hoped it was because of the liquor.
6. The woman's house was modest, and looked like every other home near it. But no other home had a door swung outward with cracked hinges.
Zevo of Kavir ran a gloved hand over it, his mind walking with possibilities. Whatever broke in was big, or at least bigger than him. In this environment and climate, that left a few possibilities. Fiend, troll, wooden golem.
Hope it's not a fiend, Zevo thought. 750 is not enough for a fiend.
Zevo went into the living room first, and his heightened hearing picked up rustling in the other room. He signaled for the others to wait at the door as he drew a sword, the one made of steel. His oiled armor made no sound as he glided, cat-like, to the room on the right. It was the woman's bedroom, and four men were tossing what was left inside. Their swords were sheathed, and their armor looked thrown together. Plenty of room for a blade to slip through. 4-1 weren't great odds, but Zevo learned long ago that when you had an opportunity to strike, you took it. So Zevo struck first. The closest bandit was tossing clothes out of a crude dresser. Zevo thrust his sword through the man's back, running it through his heart. The man stiffened, burbled, and slumped. Zevo pulled his sword out and used the momentum to pirouette to the second closest bandit, who managed to turn his head towards the Witcher and shout before a blade slashed his carotid artery. The remaining two bandits shifted and reached for their swords. Before Zevo could charge them, a cloaked figure blurred past, brandishing a sword of elder make. Ethermel slashed at the bandit's hand as he reached for his sword.
The bandit yelped and pulled back, giving the elf time to thrust his sword through the man's belly. The bandit howled and gripped his stomach, dropping to his knees. Ethermel slashed the man's throat in a fluid motion. The last bandit had drawn his sword, but quickly dropped it.
"Oh gods, what—"
"What are you doing here?" Zevo asked flatly.
"We were just— we thought we—"
"It appears he's babbling," Ethermel said. The Witcher heard Cedric gasp behind him, no doubt just walking into the room. Zevo made the sign of Axie and pointed at the babbling bandit. The bandit's eyes glazed, and he exhaled slowly. Zevo thought the man looked lost in a Fistech-induced haze. It would work.
"What are you doing here?"
"We were just looking for anything worth taking," the man said slowly and quietly. He stared straight forward at nothing in particular. "Thought there was no harm in it, with Innes being dead. Plus, we fought off those monsters to get here."
"What monsters?" Zevo asked.
"Vicious little fuckers. Short, bald, sickly green skin, razor-sharp claws and teeth. They nearly bit off Herman's finger." Zevo looked at Ethermel and at the elven blade he was holding. "Neckers." Ethermel nodded and, noticing Zevo's gaze, quickly wiped his sword clean and sheathed it.
"You should probably go now."
The bandit nodded and left, not even acknowledging Cedra, Jeremiah, or Aaron. Cedra took a step back into the living room with Aaron. Jeremiah, however, stepped forward and inspected the bandit's bloodied gambesons.
"What are you doing?" Zevo asked.
"Salvaging," Jeremiah said without looking up. "They certainly don't need it."
"Bandit said the same thing about the owner of this house," Ethermel said.
Jeremiah shrugged and began stripping the men of their armor. Aaron leaned on the broken doorframe.
"I think... I need to go."
Nobody stopped him. Zevo cleaned his own blade and said to Ethermel, "Ein Doblathana." Ethermel looked surprised to hear elder speech coming from the big man.
"Nein, ein Freiheit."
Zevo nodded.
"Let's check the rest of the house."
The murderer, it turned out, mainly stole from the living room, if the knocked-over furniture was any indication, and escaped through the back door in the kitchen. Its door hinge was similarly broken. Zevo squinted in the low light, but could make out tracks, heavy indentations that led out of town and into the forest. The Neckers helped Zevo rule out a golem. That left a troll or a fiend. Zevo had a pretty good idea of what was robbing and murdering. A good enough guess to collect the ingredients he needed to face it. But that would have to wait until morning. Zevo didn't fancy hunting and killing a troll at night. Zevo looked back at the frozen Cedra, the doubled-over Jeremiah, and the bloodied Ethermel, and thought they didn't fancy it either. 7. Three loud knocks broke Cedra from her sleep. She was thankful for it. That night brought disjointed dreams and images of dismembered bodies, blood, and grinning skulls. Cedra only remembered one thing distinctly, being chased by the spectral horsemen of the Wild Hunt. Three knocks came again. Cedra rubbed her eyes, and the thankfulness gave way to anger. "Who is it?" she snapped, sitting up in her bed.
"A humble servant, ma'am."
"A what?"
"A humble servant, ma'am, from Lady Sibilia."
Cedra scratched her head and tried to recall the name. She didn't remember betting any nobles recently, most certainly none named Sibilia.
"What does Lady Sibilia want?" Cedra asked, taking on a softer tone.
The lady prefers to tell you that herself." Cedra got out of bed and made it halfway across the room before stopping herself and turning towards the looking glass. She ruffled her hair to cover the large scar running down the right side of her face, from temple to jawbone, her mark of love. She opened the door and found a balding man with a hook nose standing in fresh livery. Cedra didn't recognize the family color scheme and didn't see any obvious coat of arms. "What time is it?" she asked.
6:30, ma'am."
"Little early, don't you think?" "The lady is an early riser." Cedra looked back at her mess of a room and her clothes strewn on the floor. She could get dressed in under a minute, grab her loot, and escape through the window. With luck, there would be something soft to land on, like bushes or a milkmaid. "The lady has invited the others as well. Your companions are waiting outside." Cedra whipped her head back to the servant.
"Which ones?"
"The bearded one and the elf."
"No witcher, eh?"
"We looked, but could not find him." Cedra thought about how Zevo butchered those two bandits without a word, and decided it was fine he wasn't coming.
"All right, give me a moment."
Cedra met Jeremiah and Ethermel, along with two other servants, of varying stages of balding,
waiting outside. The sun was on the rise, but Ashford had not yet woken. Sedra plucked a single string on her lute, the first note of the day.
"Any idea what this is about?"
Jeremiah asked as they followed the servants. Ethermel and Sedra shrugged at the same time. The troubadour was used to such invitations. She learned long ago that nobles would pay for anyone who would play a note or carry a tune, anything to help them pass the dreary time. "The world's bleak," she remembered Cersei say once. "Charge him a premium for it." Two large manors stood at the center of town, near identical. Sedra's aesthetic eye caught some keen differences, however, and put the western manor as the more sumptuous. The servants took the three to the eastern manor and told them to wait in the foyer. The middle balding servant returned and beckoned them into what Sedra assumed was the study, given the bookshelves and fireplace. Above the mantel was a large oil painting of a young man in shining armor and a ravishing blonde damsel hanging on him. Said ravishing damsel sat near the fireplace on a chaise lounge. Though she was older than her portrait, she hadn't lost any of her beauty, at least to Sedra. Lady Sibilia sipped red wine and motioned for the three to come closer.
"I won't offer you wine because you won't be here long."
"We've come to expect such hospitality in Ashford," Ethermel said.
Sibilia shrugged. "I heard you three took on a job to find whatever's been robbing people's homes."
"I'll be brief. Last night, this creature broke into my manor."
"You sure it's a creature?"
Jeremiah said. "I don't know any man that could rip my doors off its hinges like that. Yes, I'm sure it's a creature. That's why I'm disappointed the Witcher is not among you."
She gave the most balding servant a look he tactfully avoided. "No matter. The thief took something of import to me. A chest with my husband's armor."
Ethermel gave a crooked grin.
"And where is your gallant husband, m'lady?"
Sibilia's look could have frozen water, but it melted Sedra's heart. "Sir Henard is with Prince Stennis, preparing for war, something your people know a great deal about."
"He went off to prepare for war without his armor?"
Jeremiah asked quickly, before Ethermel could no doubt get them in trouble. Sibilia's smile showed no mirth. "Bet I could change that," Sedra thought, hiding her own grin.
"He went off with his, shall we say, practical armor. The armor in the chest is purely ceremonial, which is to say expensive. If you find it and return it undamaged, I'll give you a reward."
Sedra cleared her throat and bowed.
"M'lady, serving you is its own reward."
150 marks each," Sibilia said. "You can keep whatever else you find on the thief, but I want that chest."
"A fair price," Jeremiah said. "Though I'm curious if you have the armor's design lying around somewhere."
"And why would you be curious about that?"
"Well, I'm a craftsman, and I'm always on the lookout for interesting diagrams. For the design, I'd be happy to return the armor, and make a new set if you're inclined."
"Oh, lay off it," Sedra thought, then wondered if she was being too harsh on Jeremiah.
Then she remembered the craftsman stripping the thieves of their armor, and decided she wasn't being harsh enough. Sibilia sipped her wine, and Sedra marveled how it didn't mar her lipstick in the slightest.
"I can check, and if I find a diagram, you can look at it. Deal?"
"Deal,"
Jeremiah said quickly.
"Two of my guards can accompany you to find this thief, if you'd like."
Ethermel opened his mouth to speak, but Sedra said,
"Thank you, m'lady. We would be most grateful for your assistance."
"Good." Sibilia made the slightest motion with her hand, towards the door.
"I wish you the best of luck on your quest."
Sedra bowed again.
"Good day."
Ethermel gave an even lower, flourishing bow.
"Best of luck with the war."
The two guards, who introduced themselves as Romeard and Albalm, accompanied the three back to the Wolf's Head Tavern. Ashford was awake and crawling with soldiers, though Sedra noticed not as many guards glared at them as they passed. Sedra strummed a few chords on her lute and began composing a ballad about the golden-haired lady of Ashford. No one looked amused. "Uncultured, all of you," Sedra thought, and continued playing.
"Eyes deep like pools, and hair like... spools? No, that doesn't make any damn sense."
8. Ethermel saw the Witcher first, but he smelled him well before. He entered the Wolf's Head Tavern to find a pissed-looking Steldwyl.
"Why the face?"
Ethermel asked, then smelled the answer. The stench came from the back room, and smelled like a mix of burnt feet, carcass, and wet dog.
"What in the hell is that?" Rormeard asked, pinching his nose.
"Don't know," Steldwyl hawked. "Try asking your friend."
"It's like if someone tossed elk fat into a furnace," Jeremiah said.
"Ursine fat, actually."
Zevo emerged from the back room, bringing the scent with him.
along with dog tallow and Janasha petals. Ethermel turned his face away.
And where did you happen to find ursine fat?
I was lucky.
Well, good for you, Cedra said. Where have you been?
Zevo shrugged, collecting materials for...
Can we take this outside, please?
Ethermel exited without waiting for an answer. The others gratefully followed.
By the gods, do all witcher concoctions create such a stench?
I suppose, Zevo said. He looked at Romeard and Albom. Who were they?
Allies, to assist us with our hunt, Cedra said. Courtesy of Lady Sibilia, the fairest maiden in all of Ashford.
Zevo looked to Ethermel. Who?
Some racist daughter of a...
Watch it, Albom growled.
Sorry, a noblewoman of antiquated thinking. Her manor was robbed last night. She offered us coin to find a chest of her husband's armor.
How much? Zevo asked.
150 marks apiece, Jeremiah said, with a possible diagram thrown in.
We can look. Zevo eyed the group. Are you all coming along? Cedra strummed a chord.
Why wouldn't we? We were all hired, were we not?
It's just, the thing we're hunting might be.
Oh, drop it, Ethermel said. If they want to risk their neck, that's their choice. So let's get on and hunt this... What do you think it is, in your expert witching opinion?
A rock troll, Zevo said. Not certain, but it's hard to imagine it's anything else. And if I'm wrong and it's another creature... Zevo trailed off. After a moment, Ethermel felt compelled to say,
Well, what?
Then we'll all die, likely. No one said anything to that, and after a moment, Ethermel felt compelled to say,
Ah, well, let's get to it then.
They followed the trail they discovered the night before, Zevo and Ethermel leading, Romeard and Albom taking up the rear. Ethermel noticed the deep indentations in the dirt that marked footprints, but also the line in the dirt that trailed along, like a shallow cut. He noticed, too, a few scattered leaves pressed into the ground by the creature's feet. Hibiscus, maybe. The path led into the forest, through a rough-hewn trail any forester would be ashamed to use. They walked for an hour. No one said much on the trail. The troubadour didn't even pluck at her lute, thank the gods. Ethermel took the time to appreciate the quiet beauty of the forest. He realized long ago, when walking through the thick of trees and greenery, that all forests reminded him of Dol Blathana. Not that he would dare say any could compare to his home, but he enjoyed the illusion of peace the forest offered, even for just a little while. They crested a hill and came to a small clearing. Ethermel pointed to the mouth of a cave not far off. He squinted and said,
A few totems near the front, it looks like.
Necker icons, Zevo said. He drew one of his swords, the silver one, and pulled out a small vial that stank of burnt feet, carcass, and wet dog. Stay here. The witcher neared the mouth of the cave and sniffed. It didn't take long for him to rejoin the others.
Well? The elf asked.
Zevo looked somberly at the group and said, We need vodka. A lot of it.
That'll do it for this episode of Tales from the Witcher. This podcast is written and produced by Jacob Gerstel. The Witcher novels are by Andrzej Sapkowski, The Witcher games are by CD Projekt Red, and The Witcher tabletop RPG is by R. Talsorian Games. The music is by Eric Matias at soundimage.org. Be sure to leave a rating and a review, and to spread the word of this podcast far and wide. You can follow the podcast at TalesWitcherPod on X, or at talesfromthewitcher.buzzsprout.com. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you again next week.